Western Application Server, Security Open Mic. My name is Elijah Robertson, and today's call will allow you to speak with our panel of experts about your Western Application Server security questions. Before we start, we'll give you a technical overview of Western Application Server security. But first, I would like to introduce our panel of experts. Our panel consists of Keith Bobson, and Keith is the ISSW Services Worldwide Leader for Western Application Server Security. Martin Lanch is IBM Software Services for Western North American Lead for WebShare Security. Brett Ostrander has been a member of the WebShare Level 2 Support Organization since 2004, has worked on multiple WebShare components as a subject matter expert. Preston Law has been working with IBM WebShare Application Server Level 2 Support in the areas of security, management, scripting, and deployment for the past year. Ray Dugali is a performance lead in WebShare development, currently working on design and architecture of security runtime to improve the performance of security features. Robert Baretti is an advisory software engineer with WebShare Application Server Level 2 Support in RTP, North Carolina, with over 10 years of customer support experience. Vikram Thuramadu has been working on the SM and admin components for more than 4 years. We'll begin with the question and answers following the technical overview of WebShare Application Server Security from Sarah.
Thank you, Elijah. Good morning, everyone. Today's session is on WebShare Application Server Security. WebShare Application Server provides security infrastructure and mechanism to protect the J2E and administrative resources. It also addresses enterprise end-to-end security requirements on authentication, resource access control, data integrity, confidentiality, and secure interoperability. Because the security is a vast topic, due to time considerations for this session, we would like to focus mainly on the WebSphere Application Server's core security technologies, and also the communication like SSL, user registries, federated repositories. We may not be able to cover the stack parts like the portal or the process server or some of the Tivoli technologies. I'd also would like to scope it outside the web services security. From this brief overview, I'd like to turn it over to Elijah.
Thank you, Sharad, for that an overview of WebShare Application Server Security. We'll start with our questions submitted from our customers. And our first question is going to be directed to Sharad, and it is how to improve the performance role-based J2EE security and Java 2 security. And the second part of that question is, what is security attribute propagation and why do we need it?
Thank you, Eli. Okay, before we start off, I would like to, there is a myth that when you enable security, the performance is going to be really bad. We used to have some performance issues, but we have been improving the security runtime's performance for the last few releases. And security performance is not an hindrance for adaptation of application security in WebSphere. To improve, just an example, the product out of the box, we have the security attribute propagation enabled. If we are not changing the custom, changing the subject, then we may not need the SAP or the security attribute propagation. That will improve the J2E application security. That's one. And then also increasing the subject cache timeout value also, which is by default is 10 minutes. Increasing that will improve the application security performance by avoiding repeated re-authentications. And also we have many other new tuning parameters introduced, like for instance to improve Java security, we have now something called read-only subject. All these things are available in infrastructure in the resources of the documentation with WebSphere Application Server. And also, if we have to use secure A2P propagation, before I go into the details of that, what is secure A2P propagation? Secure A2P propagation is an important security feature of WebSphere Application Server. With secure A2P propagation, WebSphere can transport secure A2Ps from one server to another in your configuration. So we can avoid avoid going to the remote registry for authentications from all these different application servers. To improve SAP, if we want to use SAP but we want to improve the performance, we can use a new tuning parameter that we have introduced in 6.09 and beyond called the caller list tuning. There is either we can disable the caller list or we can use the first caller only. So those two tuning parameters will substantially improve the performance of secure A2P propagation.
All right, thanks, Sarah. Our next set of questions comes in, and is WebSphere 6.1 comes with support for SPMEZO. Is this only useful when I'm using Windows? In particular, is this only for WebSphere running on Windows? And does WebSphere need to use Active Directory as its registry? What about non-Windows desktops? And this is for Martin Lynch.
Hi, this is actually a common question that I get. And the answer to those questions is no. You do not need to use Windows in your environment. WebSphere can be running on any of the supported platforms, so all the Unix platforms, Linux on the mainframe, and on Windows. So there's nothing special that says to use Finagle you have to be running WebSphere on Windows. In fact, WebSphere doesn't even need to be configured to use Active Directory as its registry. It does make certain things simpler, but it doesn't have to. What needs to happen is the identity that's coming from the Active Directory handshake from the desktop needs to be meaningful somehow in WebSphere's registry. So if you happen to have the same user accounts in your registry as would be asserted from Active Directory, this will work just fine. Otherwise, you have to invest in a custom login module that figures out how to map your identity from Windows into the registry that WebSphere is using. Our largest customers are actually authenticating with credentials from Windows and asserting user IDs in RACF, in fact. Regarding the desktop, while the documentation talks about Internet Explorer and Windows Desktop, the reality of it is that any desktop that supports logging into Kerberos and runs browsers that understand how to do Spinago will work with the Spinago TAI. We've had customers who have had Linux desktops using Mozilla Firefox browsers. They log in, do a K-login to Active Directory, so this gives them the Kerberos credentials, and are then able to interact with WebSphere using this this technology. Similarly, we believe that Mac clients will also work.
All right, another question for Martin is, when deploying the SPMEZO TAI in a clustered WebSphere environment, how many service principal names do I need to define?
The way to look at this answer is you need to define a service principal name for every host name that the user would type in the browser. So if you're going to, you know, myportal.corp.com to your portal or whatever your app server is called, and that's what the end user thinks he's accessing, the fact that behind that exists perhaps an IP sprayer, a number of web servers, and a half dozen application servers all running in a cluster, to the end user, he thinks he's talking to a single host name. And that is the host name that should be in the service principal name that's used when configuring Spinago. The approach of defining all of the individual host names that WebSphere is running on and the web servers are running on and so on overly complicates the Spinago setup and is not at all necessary. In fact, you should probably not be allowing access to your application server other than through the normal access flow of that single virtual host name.
Thank you, Martin. My next question is, what are administrative roles and how are they used? And this is for Preston Law.
Administrative roles help you keep unauthorized users out of the console. You can set roles for any user in your LDAP, and you can define what roles that they have. So you can have a user be a monitor, and all they'll be able to do is view configuration and view the state of the application server, but they won't be able to make any changes in your environment. There's the role of configurator. They can create resources, map application servers, deploy applications. They can set up Java 2 security permissions for applications. They can also assign users and groups to role mapping for applications. There is the operator role that allows you to monitor privileges, start and stop the server, and monitor the server status in the console. And then you have also got administrator, which allows you to do everything, but administrators cannot map users and groups to the administrator role. To map a user to an administrator role, you have to be the server ID that was used to set up security. And that's the ID that you need to log into the console with the very first time after enabling security if you have not mapped any of these roles to any users. When making all these mappings, there's one file that gets updated with all the mappings. It's the admin-offs.xml file, and it's found in the profile root config directory under cells cell name. So if you cannot get into the console and you don't have the server ID, you could always map it manually in that XML file. Also, if you do enable security and you can't get logged in, there is only one way to disable security without being able to get into the console, and that's to change one entity in the security.xml file and then restart your server. It's recommended to use these roles and to assign the appropriate role mapping to the users and make sure that they have the least amount of access that they need. And that's about it.
All right, thank you, Preston. Wendy, we would like to open the lines for questions from our audience.
Certainly, sir. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically today. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by simply pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We'll take as many questions as time permits, and we'll take you in the order that you signal us. Additionally, if you're utilizing a speakerphone, please pick up your handset for better audio quality and to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we'll pause one moment. We do have a couple questions that just entered the queue. Before we take them, I'd like to remind our audience that star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Jinten Sood with NITT Technology.
Hi. My question today is, though I know that's not part, it was said initially it's not part of the discussion, but I just wanted to have a broad view as to, like, what are the benefits of using the built-in security of VAS versus using the Tivoli products for security, products like TAM Access Manager?
All right. I'm going to repeat that question. The question is that, well, by default, when we install the WebSphere product, so we get the default WebSphere the component pieces. So that the question is, so what would be the difference, like, you know, what would be the advantages when we use, like, other than the WebSphere, the security components, when we use the Tivoli components, such as, for example, the Tivoli Access Manager, or maybe the directory server, or maybe identity manager, things like that.
Keith, I would like to take that question.
Sure, I'll be happy to take that question. So we actually get this question fairly frequently, and I think the way to think about it is along a couple different dimensions. First of all, the app server itself provides a security infrastructure, which is specifically designed to support J2E applications and actually in the future other types of applications that we leverage, you actually really have to use the Webster security infrastructure, because if you don't, it's actually not possible to secure the Webster applications. So, for instance, Webster itself provides access control and identification information for J2E applications and accessing back-end resources like Kix and IMS and things like that through a variety of components that we provide, or you can get optionally depending on the scenario. But a Tivoli product by itself actually can't secure these applications. Now, what these products can do is provide very significant additional value in an appropriate context. So, for example, if you were to use Tivoli Access Manager WebSeal, you could then place an authenticating proxy server in front of Webster application server, which would give you the additional value of an authenticating proxy server, such as DMZ authentication, more advanced authentication techniques, actually some additional features around password management, things like that, like WebSeal has the ability to lock out accounts and things like that that Webster App Server itself doesn't provide. And then what happens is that WebSeal has specifically constructed components that actually integrate with Webster App Server's existing security infrastructure. So there's a thing that actually Martin mentioned a minute ago called a TAI, which is a Trust Associated Interceptor, which basically WebSeal has authenticated the user, done some authorization checking, et cetera, and then it tells WebSeal, hey, by the way, this is Bob. Webster says, excellent, I will now do my stuff based around the user Bob. So that's one example. There's lots of other features. I mean, I could talk for hours about what Tivoli products can do, but at a high level, TAM provides an authorization engine, which some customers like to use from Webster directly by calling the APIs. If you wanted to do complex single sign-on scenarios around things like Liberty Alliance and WS Federation, Tivoli Federated Identity Manager provides support for that. One of the things buried in there is the support for SAML tokens, which some customers want to use. If you have a complex registry environment with lots of users in different repositories, that can be very difficult to manage, and actually Tivoli has two different products that can address those types of problems. One is called Tivoli Identity Manager, and the other is called, so many product names, Tivoli Directory Integrator, and those two products actually are to some degree independent of Webster, but basically they come up in the context of a lot of Webster scenarios, because Webster tends to sort of cause us to realize that, oh wow, we have users in three different registries, but we still want them to access the same Webster environment. How can we solve that? And a lot of the Tivoli products can address those types of things. So, I could go on, but I don't want to spend too much time. But like I said, the summary I always give for people is you still need Webster security, whether or not you're using the Tivoli products. What you do with the Tivoli products is you look at the scenario you have and you see what value they provide for you in that context. And if you have needs that are addressed by those products, then you're obviously going to be happy with them. And for example, we have lots of customers using Tivoli Access Manager and WebSeal. It's incredibly common. I think I'll stop with that.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you. We'll now move on to our next question with Tian Dan from BMC Software.
My question regarding the JSSE provider. We noticed that we have IBM JSSE provider 2 instead of the regular IBM JSSE provider. What is the difference between those two and which one we should use?
Okay, I'll repeat the question here. The question is that there are two different providers, the IBM JSSE and IBM JSSE 2 provider. And the customer question is, so what is the difference between these two providers and when to, what should we use, when to use them?
Brett, you would like to take
that? Yeah, sure. This is Brett Ostrander. By default at 6.0, we changed from using the IBM JSE provider to the IBM JSE provider 2. The Webster SSL is going to use IBM JSE provider 2 in almost all instances. There's a couple scenarios where if you configure JSSE, we will use that, but that's only for a couple. I don't recall offhand. I think it's a JMS, and there's one other. I'll have to look that up. But basically, we're going to use the IBM JSE provider 2 from this point on. The differences are actually documented in our JSSE specs. There's a number of different changes. I just don't think I can get into them all. But basically, try to give you some examples here. You know, full chain validation on certificates. Now, when a server sends us a chain, whereas JSSC sometimes would accept it, if we had a signed certificate for anything in the chain, we may accept that personal cert and validate it. Whereas with JSSC2, we're going to do a full chain validation. Basically, a lot of stuff is just it's just more secure. I'm not sure. I mean, how much more you want me to get into here? I mean, I can provide you with the documentation with all the exact differences. I don't think you want me to read that off, though.
Yeah. So one specific question is: should we convert our program to use the 2, or is backward compatible?
So you have applications that are calling the default provider, or you actually specify the provider in your application?
So we have both. We have one that we can do in the statically in the Java security, and then we have the program that we programmatically using the provider.
Right. Well, you can still use the JSSC provider. It's still there. The jar is still provided. It's still in the Java security. If you call that specifically, it will load and use those. And use that provider, but when you call the default provider now, you're going to call the JSC2 provider. So, to be honest, I don't know if we're going to remove that or not at version 7. I really can't speak on that. But up to version 6.1, you can still use the JSC provider. It is still available in the JVM.
Yeah, my point is, if I change it from the provider to provider 2,
mm-hmm.
all the backward compatible should be okay. Is that correct?
Backward, as far as if. On your version 5.1?
Yeah.
I believe the JSC provider 2 was also provided at version 5.1. Correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to Raj Parnikar with Vanguard.
Hi. My question is around the LTPA token, and I just wanted to know that is there any programmatically way of creating the token?
I'll repeat that question again. The question is that is there any way, or is there any example how we can create the customized LTPA token rather using the one Raspberry is creating?
Okay, Keith, want to go for that?
Okay, this is that's a fairly complicated question, and some of my colleagues here from L2 may also want to jump in with respect to some support statements. But so there is no published programming API to create an LTPA token, and that's a conscious decision by IBM. We also don't document the format of the LTPA token. That is also a conscious decision. However, depending on your scenario, you can, in fact, obtain an LTPA token. And so, for example, if you have an already authenticated user and for some reason you need an LTPA token cookie that you want to basically send to a web browser or something like that explicitly, and this is something that would be very unusual, but there are cases where this matters, there are, in fact, ways to get access to the Webster LTPA cookie by actually writing some code to get the cookie out of the runtime. And the way I can't describe code to you in a phone call, but basically the Webster subject contains within a WS credential object as well as the SSO token object. And those two objects represent the LTPA token, the WS credential in the case of security propagation being off, and the SSO token representing it when security propagation is on, and both of those tokens actually have methods to convert them to byte strings, and you can then convert a byte string via Base64 encoding to an LTPA cookie. So if you really need to do this, it is possible. I have another number of customers who've done it in fairly obscure scenarios. I can actually provide a presentation on this. I'm not quite sure how best to get that to you, but I have a presentation that discusses this. The second part of it is that if you don't have an authenticated user and you actually need to create an authenticated user, which might be why you're doing this, you can also do what we like to call server-side identity assertion, where you can basically create a user on the fly without knowing their password, and then once that user identity exists, you can then, of course, extract the LTPA token from it, as I just described in the previous part of the question. So is that addressing your question, or do you have a different reason for asking it?
No, definitely. Thanks, Keith. And you know, we talked to you earlier also when we were acquiring FileNet.
Right. Well, then you know my email address. So I won't have to say it out loud. So if you send me an email, I'd be happy to give you a presentation that talks about those two points.
Definitely. And then what we are trying to do is, we are trying to achieve, we have the authenticated user information on our side, right? Because we use other products to authenticate the user. And when it goes into the app server, then we somehow, we have other products like FileNet, and then we have Domino server, where we want to achieve single sign-on. And we, what we are trying to do is we are trying to avoid the way of going through the TAI and setting up the custom user registry. Because we already have authenticated users, so we just wanted a way of creating LTP tokens so that we can have single sign-on across this platform.
Right, but yeah, that's probably not, what I've described to you is probably not going to get you what you think you want. So that's a different scenario. Right? An LTPA token is not an authenticated user. An LTPA token is a construct Webster uses to propagate information about an authenticated user. So if you want a user to be a valid Webster user, they have to be authenticated to Webster. Right, and that can be done via TAI or via what I just described, server-side identity insertion, which is somewhat, it's appropriate in some scenarios and not appropriate in some other scenarios. So I'm always hesitant when people say they're going to use that.
Right, so it's not an authenticated user, but when it goes on other platform, right, and, or doesn't WebSphere again, you know, validate the user against the repository which it has?
If you flow an LTPA token, it would in the right scenarios. This is a very complicated question, and as I think I've said to you folks more than once, you know, this is going to require a lot of conversation to talk through your scenarios.
Yeah. Okay, so we definitely want to set up that conversation, you know, like, so I can send you an email and
okay.
We can work on that. Thank you.
Thank you, and as a reminder to our audience, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star one. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star one. And we'll take our next question from Sanicha Rajarajan from State of New Hampshire.
Hello. We have some users on Active Directory and some users on Oracle. We are planning to migrate our application from WebLogic to WebSphere. So in that context, do we need TAM or can we use the WebSphere inbuilt security?
All right. I'll repeat the question. Let me make sure I understand the question. The question is that currently you have the applications running in the WebLogic server.
Yeah.
Where you are using, like, you know, Active Directory server?
No, currently we are not, but we are planning to use ADS. So, and migrating to WebSphere in that context, and some users will be on ADS and some will be on Oracle. In that case, do I need TAM or can I use the WebSphere inbuilt security to authenticate the user?
Is this question from the WebSphere 6.1 perspective or 6.0?
6.1.
6.1.
Yeah.
Alright, yeah, I'll take this question. In WebSphere 6.1, there is the repository called Federated Repository, where you can register your Active Directory as well as if you have another security server, for example. Oracle, you said Oracle, what is the product name?
I said Oracle. Some users are in the Oracle and some users are
in... Do you have your own custom registry written where that custom registry is running on the Oracle database?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So basically you want to have the custom registry as well as Active Directory?
Yes.
Together in the WebSphere, and you want to manage both of them from the WebSphere?
Yes.
Right, yeah. There is the new technology called the Federated Repository where you can register, you know, you can add your Active Directory as well as custom registry. So which means, like, you know, when you have the application running in a WebSphere, when you log in into the application, so we're going to look for that user in both registries, like, for example, Active Directory as well as your custom registry.
Here for a second, your users that are in Oracle, is that an Oracle database or is that an LDAP of some sort?
Oracle database.
Okay, and they already exist in a database?
Yes. And
the federated repository that Vikram was talking about is able to read users from a database, but it has to be a database that it creates, not one that you have already created.
Okay.
So it sounds like you actually need a custom user registry to be able to read your users from your Oracle database.
So, in that case, how TAM is going to help me?
In this context, I'm not sure whether the TAM is going to help you out here.
Yeah, I don't think TAM would help with this at all.
Right. So basically here we are talking about the registry, the security registries. So you can have multiple registries as a part of federated repository, but when it comes to the Tivoli Access Manager...
In fact, actually with TAM, I think the problem would be worse because TAM can only support use LDAP as a registry unless they write a custom... let me think now, custom EAI, which I can't remember what that stands for, but that's the TAM custom authentication stuff. But if you have users in two repositories, what you need to do is use the virtual member manager / federated repositories, and you're going to need to write a custom adapter for your Oracle database, and then you can use the IBM provided LDAP adapter for Active Directory.
Yeah, because IBM provides an interface for the custom repositories.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use your own JDBC connector to connect to that, and then, of course, you can use the same interface to have your own custom user registry. And then with that and the Active Directory, you can have a, configure them together with the VMM or the federated repositories. But the key there is, you know, you should not have the duplicated entries in both the repositories there. So you should have unique.
Unique, yeah. But the first, the MyCourt should first check in ADS. If it's not present in ADS, it should go and check in Oracle database.
That's not how VMM works. It always queries both registries.
Oh, okay.
And enforces uniqueness. If the user is present in both databases, the authentication will fail.
That answer your question?
Yeah. Raj, has your question? Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Yes.
We'll now move on to Kyle Dalton with United Stationers. Please go ahead.
Hi, I was curious if you could explain the overhead with Java 2 security and how it's improved and what the differences are.
Okay, I can take that. The Java 2 security is, of course, you know, it is the fine-grained resource access. So you are going to tell how you're going to have these, the policy you set it up. Like, you know, I would like to have access to this at a class level, right? It has two parts to it. One is the Java 2 security costs when you enable it, and of course when you are using, let us say you have J2C authentication, right? It's happening. Then you will incur some extra costs because what will happen is whenever you have a J2C authentication with a unique user, you create a subject. So we have something called read-only subject optimization. It will avoid creating the subjects repeatedly, and it will reuse. So that will improve the Java 2 security. But the Java 2 security, you cannot avoid the cost completely because the costs of that you incur with Java 2 security depend on how many permissions you are actually checking. But we have tuning parameters to improve the performance and reduce the overhead.
So it's based on what we specify as permission. So if we have a smaller file, policy file, it's faster?
Yes. If you are doing lots of permission checking, of course, it is proportionately higher cost that you will be paying. But there are some tuning parameters, as I mentioned earlier, that will reduce this extra cost. For instance, if you have in your application, let us say you have 100 unique users, they all, using the Java security and, you have the J2C authentication happening too, then if you use this read-only subject tuning parameter and also tune the subject cache to 100, then the cost will be minimal. Because what will happen is if you have 100 unique users and if you have the tuning cache to 50, right, once you reach that 50 limit, then we will start invalidating the cache, and you know, we'll purge that, and we will start recreating the subject again. That will take some extra cycles.
Is the cache on the JVM the application or the cell level?
It's at the JVM.
Okay.
So with this read-only subject cache option, we have seen Java 2 security overhead significantly reduced. But again, if you have more and more permissions that you will be checking, right, you know, the cost will be proportionally higher. That should be, you know, taken into consideration.
Do you have any doc that to give some basic numbers?
Oh, yes. I don't know if you have an NDA with IBM, but we do have the performance report for 6.1 that has the charts that showing what is the cost of Java 2 security.
Is that after the 6.109 release?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have included this tuning at 6.109 and beyond. So, yes, this has numbers on 6.109.
Because that's when you improve the performance, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Can you give me the name of that document so I can ask my IBM rep?
Okay, it is VSphere Application Server Performance for V6.1.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. And as a final reminder to our audience, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll now hear again from Jensen Sood.
Hi. This is a follow-up question to the discussion that my colleague was having earlier regarding the federated repositories. So my first, this is like a two-part question. The first part that I have is like, what is the difference between a federated repository and a custom repository? Are they two different things or are they same? And the second one concerns the authorization using the federated repository.
Okay. Maybe I can take the first one. So the difference between a custom user registry and a federated repository. The federated repository is the new repository that we have support from WebSphere 6.1 and beyond. And, of course, we do have support for a custom registry on 6.1 and beyond, too. What is the purpose of the custom registry? That's exactly to resolve the problem that you have right now. You are trying to migrate from one application server to another. You have your own users in an Oracle database. You know, so how do we migrate them, right? So to enable that, we have a custom registry interface that we have made it available. So with that, what you can do is you can write your own JDBC connector to access these users from your database. And you can actually configure that custom file-based or custom JDBC-based registry into our security configuration. That is the main purpose, so that you don't need to, you can still use whatever you're using as a repository for your users. For the federated repository, the main thing is we would like to see, because there is a requirement, right, and you may have your users spread across in two LDAP registries, or two different repositories. So how do we manage them in one realm? So that is the support that we have provided in 6.1. So you can have your users sitting on Microsoft Active Directory or Tivoli LDAP. And then you can configure both of them in the same realm so that you can, WebSphere can query both the repositories and then get the users.
Yeah, let me add a point of clarification because this may be, I may suspect where your point of confusion is. If you look at the WebSphere admin console and you're configuring your registry, you're presented with three choices. Let's see, four choices. Operating system, custom, federated, and LDAP. All right. And on the custom, there's a thing that we call a custom registry. That is also what we would call the legacy registry support. So going forward, the federated repositories is sort of our more, I don't want to say preferred, that's probably too strong a word, but it's sort of our more powerful registry that we've added to the product in 6.1. The key value of the federated repository is it can support multiple underlying repositories. In particular, which I think is the point of your question, One of the repository types it supports is a custom adapter. All right, so if you're a customer and you want to write code to access a custom source of user information, for example, in Oracle, you have a decision to make. You can either write a custom registry, which would then be directly configured in WebSphere, or you could use the Federated Repository feature and write a custom adapter that would access Oracle. Now, in your situation, because you have users in both LDAP and in Oracle, it is probably best to use the Federated Repository, because then your custom adapter would access just the Oracle database and the IBM LDAP code would access your LDAP registry. If you chose to instead do the custom registry approach, you would have to write a single registry that would access both LDAP and Oracle and merge the results together yourself. That's really the distinction between the two features.
Right, yeah, thanks. That clarifies a lot, and that was the understanding that even we had, that federated repository was the way to go forward. And I think we can ensure that the users are unique across the two repositories. So in that case, you don't think there would be any problems that we might face, right?
Well, I mean, you know, that's an open-ended question. I mean, but, you know, generally speaking, the federated repository should work fine for you. The issue with the uniqueness, just so we're clear, is that when a user logs in with a user ID, WebSphere queries both all of the configured repositories for that user ID, and as long as it gets no duplicates, it'll be happy.
Right, we can ensure that, it doesn't get any duplicates.
Yeah.
The second part of my question was that this, I believe, would take care of the authentication. What about the authorization? Like, as of today, we have all our authorization rules that are in Java, and they are based on the tables that are defined in the Oracle database. And going forward, we want to keep it that way, the similar way. So can, using the federated repository, we can use our own custom authorization rules?
Well, I guess it depends on how you're asking that question, right? I mean, you need to make a clear distinction between authentication and authorization. We use the federated repository or whatever repository you have configured to authenticate the user. Once the user is authenticated, we create a J2E subject which has a user ID in it and group information. And then at that point, WebSphere itself can do J2E authorization, which you can configure the usual way. If you want to do your own custom authorization, you know, that's fine. Just write your code to do it. There's nothing really involved in WebSphere at that point. So you could query your Oracle database, get whatever information is you need out of the Oracle database, and then you could implement your custom authorization rules based on the information that WebSphere, based on the fact that WebSphere can tell you who the user is.
Right, but as we understand, like the J2E subject, once it is created post authentication, it's passed on for the authorization purposes. So how would that happen? Like, do I use some interface that WebSphere provides for doing this custom authorization in this case?
Well, you could write a custom JACC provider, but I would never do that. That's way too much work.
Right.
I mean, it's just code, right? You know, you write in your EGB method when you get a call, say, you know, if custom framework I've built authorizes this access, then proceed else fail. And your custom framework would get the user ID from WebSphere and optionally the group information if you want that as well, and it would do whatever it does.
Okay, so like today we have a servlet that does this kind of check. So if we have a federated repository and it creates a subject after a valid authentication, so you believe that we could still chain in our servlet to do the rest of the authorization work?
Probably not a servlet. I don't know why a servlet would do authorization in the sense you're saying it. But, I mean, if you have Java code that can do authorization, you're going to have to change that code to do authorization based on what WebSphere knows about the user. I don't know how to answer your question. I mean, I think, you know, you have code, right, that makes authorization decisions. So change that code to base the authorization decision on the authenticated J2E identity.
Okay.
Right?
Fine. Yeah. Thank you.
I would like to now turn the call over to Sarah for a brief summary of today's call.
Thanks, Eliza. Thank you, everyone. Actually, today's call had questions on varied topics of WebSphere application security, like the security performance, security propagation, Spinago, administrator user roles and why we need them, and then when do we want to use the TAM versus the native JAC provider. And also the JSSC provider, and can we programmatically call the LTP token, and also the nice discussion on the custom and the federated repositories. Overall, even though this, so this is a vast topic for security, so we would like to thank all of you for the very good questions on this. So we would like to have any follow-up questions or anything, you know, you can actually send us your questions. We will be glad to answer them. Now back to you, Elijah.
Thank you, Sarah. Right at the end of today's call regarding Webster Application Server Security, we hope we were very helpful in answering your questions today. We also would like to thank the panel for joining the call today. Once again, we hope that today's call was very helpful to everyone, and we hope that you will join us for future open mic calls, which can be found on our Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks again for joining, and thanks to the panel for speaking to our audience today.